Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 47 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John, and I'm here on a mission to help marketers like you sharpen their skills by talking to some of today's top marketing experts. Today, I had the pleasure of talking to Darina Kulia. She's the co-founder of YC-backed OpenPhone. Now, this one I actually recorded live, so you might hear some sirens in the background, and I'm sorry for that, but I couldn't control the environment there. Darina was visiting from Toronto, from San Francisco for that day, and when I reached out to her on Twitter, she said she'll be here, and why don't we do it live? And I was like, okay. She didn't know that I haven't recorded a live podcast for over a year because there's so much things that you can't control in terms of variable. I've been recording my podcast remotely. In this episode, you learn exactly what Darina did to acquire OpenPhone's first 100 paying customers without spending a single dollar on ads. She actually used Facebook groups and also Reddit, which if you are familiar with that, is really hard because all those people there, if they smell somebody sounding like they're going to sell them something, they come out with pitchforks in hordes. So that's something that you'll find out here, how she did that. You also will hear the best advice Paul Graham, the co-founder of Y Combinator, gave to Darina and the OpenPhone team during their time at Y Combinator. So Darina actually got to meet Paul Graham. If you don't know him, he is somebody a lot of people in startups really look up to. You should check out his essays. I created a one-page cheat sheet with the actionable growth tips from this episode. All I need from you is your email address and I'll email it to you. You can get it at growthtoday.fm/047. You notice I changed my domain, made it shorter. So that's growthtoday.fm/047. You can find a link in the description of wherever you get podcasts. You can also find a link in the description of wherever you got your podcast. It should be linkable. With this, you will be part of the GMT, the Growth Marketing Today community. You can also get tweetable quotes, show notes, and key takeaways from this episode in that page. Now, if you're new here, please subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. As always, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, I would really appreciate it if you just take 2 minutes of your time to leave a 5-star review so we can reach more marketers with this podcast. Yeah, I don't want to talk anymore. Let's listen in on this episode with Darina. Everybody, I have Darina here in Toronto because now you're in San Francisco. You've just gone through YC. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me, Ramley. I'm doing, you know, it's a beautiful day today. And also, I mean, you saw the parade. We picked the perfect time.
I know, right? It's packed. Like, good thing we found this place. We're near Spadina. And if we were closer to the downtown core, I don't like crowds. Do you like crowds?
I'm not particularly a fan. I was going to say, if I had like a front row, if I could be somewhere at the front, I would enjoy that. But I mean, you had to probably camp over the weekend to get right. Any good spots.
Yeah, and that's what some folks did. Before we talk about OpenPhone and YC and Paul Graham, I'm sure you have a lot of stories. Can you talk a little bit about your experience from going to Deloitte? And now you're founding this YC-backed startup, OpenPhone. So what is a little bit of your story?
For sure. Thank you. So, you know, I studied business computer science. I'm starting there because I always wanted to be at the place where business and technology meet. And I'm very happy that throughout sort of my career, I was able to be in, you know, in those interesting roles where I could apply both business and, you know, technical skills. Essentially, you know, after graduating from university, I joined Deloitte as a consultant. And then I did some time on the innovation team. I found it to be an incredible learning experience just as a new grad, not knowing exactly what I want to do and figuring it out. But what I realized actually quite very quickly is that I love startups.
I love startups too.
Hey, and I was a Deloitte consultant who was talking to a lot of startups and I had probably people being like, okay, but you love startups and you are a Deloitte.
Consultant, yeah.
Yeah, what's up with that? The truth is that I spent quite a bit of time on the innovation team at Deloitte, which gave me exposure to a lot of great early stage startups and also helped me, you know, develop my prototyping skills and helped me figure out how to take an idea and almost figure out this like early MVP and get feedback. That's what our team did. And that was actually pretty good experience to help me get into the field of product management, which I know everyone these days wants to be a product manager.
Yeah, that's true.
That is something I've noticed. So, you know, another thing that happened, and which actually I know a lot of people you interview, they have very non-linear career paths. And I, you know, my journey into the startup world certainly wasn't an easy one or linear one in any way. But what really helped me is, you know, I ultimately knew I wanted to be, you know, building things, building products. One of the things I did was I started a community called Product Hunt Toronto.
Yeah, I saw that. Were you ever in touch with Ryan?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh, sweet.
So with Product Hunt Toronto, I basically at some point when I saw, you know, Product Hunt when it was still pretty early, I thought it was amazing for someone who is very curious about new products to see what other people are building, to put your product out there, to get feedback. And what's interesting is, you know, you're getting feedback from other makers and early adopters. So it's a very positive community. People are very encouraging.
Yeah.
And you can also, as someone, again, who is interested in building products, being a product manager or, you know, working at a startup, you actually can learn a lot about how people perceive these early products and how to sort of like make it into something people want. So that was very interesting, doing Product Hunt Toronto, getting to know so many great companies here locally who are building very interesting products.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like all of these things somehow helped me work at a startup, which was Vidyard.
So, oh, okay. You were at Vidyard.
So yeah. So I was at Vidyard. My journey to Open Phone again was definitely not very linear, but I was at Vidyard in Waterloo as a PM. You know, that was a phenomenal experience.
Yeah.
I think without that experience, it's hard for me to see how I would be doing what I'm doing now, given what I learned and what I was able to do.
Like, how long did you stay at Vidyard? And it's like, oh, this is it. Open Phone. I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to do this full time.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So I was at Vidyard for 2 years. I was very fortunate to work on a product called Go Video, which is a freemium consumer product of Vidyard, which I worked on essentially since I started at Vidyard. And what was very cool is I realized that I love building and you know, creating something from scratch. And what's amazing is I was able to do that at a company that already, you know, is further along. So in a sense, I felt like we were building essentially almost a startup within a startup, which is very unique experience.
Yeah.
Essentially of being an intrapreneur, if you like that word. From there to Open Phone. So actually Open Phone started from my co-founder Mahir, who there are several ways that it all came together, but the interesting one, and I think anyone who's listening who's Canadian will probably appreciate this, is that Mahir is my co-founder, and his friend ported his personal phone number from Rogers or Fido,
yeah.
I don't remember exactly, to this VoIP service that from the looks of it just looked kind of sketchy. let's just say that. And the friend told Mahir, like, hey, it's really cool. You save a lot of money, and it also works everywhere because it's based on internet. So what Mahir did is he essentially did that. He ported his phone number from Rogers. I hope no one from Rogers is listening right now. But again, as out of curiosity, right? This is what you do. You just experiment. So he ported his phone number from Rogers to this VoIP service and found that the quality of calls is excellent because he used to live at a pretty high rise building, and the connectivity was actually better. With on a strong Wi-Fi compared to a regular phone call. And also he was saving like a ton of money. Let's just say, you know, we're getting really ripped off here with our
agree
with our plans. And that was you know, at that point, you know, he looked at it and he was like, I can definitely build something better. And, you know, the service he was using was very clunky and not very reliable. So that was how, and he just started building OpenPhone. And for me, he started building this app, and I was able to sort of see it from the early days. And the moment I saw it, I immediately knew it probably one of those things when you hear something, you see something and you're like, this, like I want to [S2] Right. [S1] Do this. That immediately resonated with me because, so tying it back to my story, when I was at Deloitte, I carried two phones.
Oh, wow. Really? That's crazy.
I carried two phones. I had my personal cell phone and I had a Deloitte gave me a phone. So I had two cell phones and I really never, so both of them were always like had low battery. I had to remember to charge both of them. There was ever like no, any bag or anything you wear, you always have to just remember that you have two phones on you. let's just say it was not ideal. You know, when I saw it, it was one of those things where like, obviously we need to do this. And from that point on, I think I knew right away that I wanted to do it full time. It took me a while to, you know, to go from, at that point it was very early to doing it full time. But I think from the first point, I knew that like this is something I want to be a part of.
At what point did you, so you quit, how long did it take before getting accepted to YC? You know, the YC is like so sought after. I heard the acceptance rate is less than 1%. Like Dropbox has been there, Airbnb, a lot of big companies. Like how long did it take from quitting to getting into YC?
Yeah, so it's interesting. Well, first of all, extremely fortunate that the founders of Vidyard have been very, very supportive. I mean, they're in a, you know, knowing the Vidyard story and being, working at Vidyard really showed me how, you know, they value entrepreneurship and how supportive they've been towards, you know, this pursuit of mine. So when I was very honest and upfront about sort of what I was doing and how, there was a chance that at some point I would be transitioning. And interestingly, again, life is unexpected. I certainly, shortly after I gave my notice and I was transitioning, we had our YC interview. So it was actually a pretty quick,
right, within the same,
very
right.
quick transition. And someone could say like, oh, well, you just left because of YC.
Yeah,
But actually, you were
leaving already.
I was leaving already. And yeah. it was just sort of kind of interesting timing. But you know, when you have your YC interview, you certainly hope for the best and you're there to, you know, to tell your story, to do your best, but you don't, I think, when you apply to YC, you know, given the odds, I don't think anyone is like, oh, is really, you know, banking on the fact that
That's
they will
so
get
funny.
In. So I certainly didn't, you know, we had the intentions of building the company regardless. So there were plans in place to build this thing, regardless of YC.
Were you referred by Michael Litt? Did they refer you at all? Because I think that goes a long way. I think there's a few ways to increase your chances to YC. First of all, be in Kitchener-Waterloo. Like there's a lot of startups in Kitchener-Waterloo area that are being accepted. Secondly, being referred by somebody who was part of the alumni really goes a long way. So did he help you out? Did they like, hey, Paul, we know these people. They're good people. They know what they're doing.
I don't think there was an email sent to Paul Graham.
Sam Altman, right? Yeah, the president at that time.
Or Michael Seibel.
Michael, yeah.
I don't necessarily think there was that email, but they certainly were very supportive, both Michael and Devin at Vidyard. And they, I believe they recommended it. At this point, you know, so they really helped, you know, with preparing for the interview, and just, you know, there's also a science when it comes to preparing for the YC interview. So they certainly helped us with that. And at that point, you know, it was almost then when you have the interview, it's all based on your performance. So you can get some help sort of getting. And recommendations from alumni definitely help. Also, being in Kitchener-Waterloo, we were in Velocity. We were based Velocity, which was incredible. Given so many alums went to YC, and are extremely helpful. I would say that huge thanks to Velocity and Jay Shaw there, who certainly prepared us. Also, again, helped us connect with other alumni who were helping us prepare, get prepared. Yeah, I only have great things to say about how they
sort of
got us ready for the next phase.
Yeah, I completely understand. I actually had a startup at Velocity Garage when it was with Mike. So Mike's the previous head of Velocity Garage, and then Jay, I didn't see Jay come in.
Yeah.
But man, that environment is just totally amazing.
Like, did you sit at the,
not in the pit. I was on the upper level. I was actually beside another startup called Blitzen.
That's amazing. So now I'm wondering if our paths probably crossed somehow before.
Maybe, probably, but I don't remember when 2013 or 14? No, probably not. It was way, way back then.
Oh,
then
I see.
Moved to Toronto. So you've gone through YC. That was last summer, 2018, right?
That was actually exactly a year ago. So we did YC exactly a year ago.
What's your most memorable experience? Like, is there any experience that really stands out for you that's like, oh man, that was top notch?
Yeah. So, you know, there are two experiences. They are highly connected with each other. I think there is really nothing that compares to YC Demo Day, which is the event where all the startups in the batch present. It's a very short 2-minute, I believe it was, 2.5 minutes, perhaps, sort of a pitch that you give in front of this entire investor community in Silicon Valley. That is one of the most stressful and most, I certainly remember the day that we were presenting. But the other very memorable experience was actually our preparation for Demo Day, because you need to be on top of your game. It's a very brief presentation, and you need to be memorable, especially given there were so many other companies doing it with us. You need to stand out. So one of my biggest memories was actually when we were working with Paul Graham to help us get prepared to YC Demo Day. And so Paul was, he was available to companies in our batch to help get prepared. And he didn't really know much about, he wasn't that involved in the beginning of the batch. So he was meeting us for the first time. And
oh, wow.
And we had to talk about what we do and our numbers, our growth, and what is the big vision for the company. And what I realized is that when it comes to simplifying and telling a story, simplifying a message and telling a story, you know, there's really no one like him. He essentially drew, I still have a photo somewhere on my phone. He drew everything about our company. He basically just made a very simple sort of picture of how we are replacing desk phones and how we are the phone of the future. And he made that very, very eloquent, very simple and clear on the board that I look back and say, like, that here we come with one way to talk about what we do. But he was able to simplify that message.
And so good.
As an example, something that I also tell all the time to other founders, that you need to communicate your value proposition and what you do in a very brief sentence. I don't remember what our sort of one-liner was pre-YC. I know it was definitely not a one-liner. Pre-YC, it was this long thing that I don't even know how I remembered it myself, but now it's very simple. We give you a business phone number in an app on your cell phone. So that really practicing how to talk about what you do in the very, very simple way that, you know, a 5-year-old can understand.
That makes sense.
I think that is what, you know, that was just super memorable. And again, having PG do it for you.
Oh, man.
You're sitting next to him and you're like, oh, I've read all his essays.
Right.
And, you know, that was very, very special.
You have like a fan moment. It's like, oh my goodness, Paul Graham is in the same room as me. Did you have that moment? Or was it just like, yeah, I'm going to be cool here?
Well, I think I was trying to be. I was trying to keep calm and just talk about what we do. But I think everyone, it wasn't just us, everyone around was very excited to share what they're building with him and kind of get this very fresh perspective. These days, as I'm sure you know, you hear startup pitches all the time.
Yeah.
People like to throw different buzzwords. And sometimes you are like, what is it that you do? You don't, like you hear a pitch and you still don't understand. And I think that one thing we learned is that before you can really sell someone on the idea, whether it's as a customer or potential investor, you just need to explain what you do. And that's simple, like, hey, you can't, like, you need to know what I'm do. So that was very helpful.
I want to shift gears now and let's talk about growth and marketing. How were you able to acquire your first 10 customers? Is there anything that you did? Did you go on a bunch of phone calls? Like, did you start like sending out mail? Like, what was your first tactic to get your first 10 customers?
This is one question I so much wish I could just learn more about this from other founders before starting on our journey. So to anyone listening who is an early stage founder and you're just building something very early, again, really hope this is helpful. But the truth is that the whole premise of build it and they will come, that doesn't happen, sadly. I wish that was the case. What ended up happening is, so when we started with OpenPhone, in our initial product, you know, it was essentially a prototype. It was we're not yet thinking about how much are we going to charge. We just wanted users. We wanted people to try it, use it, and tell us
feedback.
Give us feedback. Feedback is most important. So what we ended up doing is the way that we got our first 10 or maybe even 100 customers who signed up for the beta was actually Facebook groups.
Okay, interesting.
So our premise initially was we got inspired in many ways to do OpenPhone based on the fact that for a lot of small business owners and entrepreneurs, there's no easy way to have a business phone number on top of your cell phone. And we wanted to build something very easy and modern. So I joined a whole bunch of Facebook groups for entrepreneurs. And I also didn't know exactly what type of entrepreneurs or what type of businesses would find this most helpful. It was so early. We had hypotheses, but it was, you know, we didn't know. So the first 10 customers was certainly me joining a whole bunch of Facebook groups for different types of entrepreneurs and professionals. And at the time, the message was clear. You know, it was engaging in the conversation saying, hey, this is the problem we've seen. We've noticed that so many people hate using their personal phone number for business. We want to build a very simple solution. Sign up. You know, we are launching soon. This was kind of pre-launch. So this was like, hey, leave us your email. If this is interesting, we will let you know when it's available. So what I found very powerful was before we had a product, there's no excuse to not go out there and get people to sign up, even if it's all it is just a website with an email, because it's actually easier, I think, to get people to engage in that conversation when you don't even have a product yet, because people wouldn't think you're really selling. And also you're telling them, hey, I'm building this thing.
Interesting.
You would be one of the first people to try it out. I value your opinion. Tell me what you think. So actually our first paid customers, so we gathered a lot of like quite a good list of people interested in what we were building. And when we were ready, we were giving them access to the product sort of gradually. When we became a paid product, we already had this list of people who were using it for free or who've heard about us. At that point, we were not starting from zero. But the first emails, like the first people who expressed interest, I found them on different Facebook groups, different communities, different forums. That was how we got our first customers.
I find with Facebook groups, it can be very like in and out. They can get really violent against you if they notice that you're trying, especially with Reddit. When you go to certain subreddits and they're like, they can smell somebody trying to sell something. So then your strategy with like, hey, we're offering this for free, and then you can sign up for free, it actually worked.
So it's interesting. We actually, so right now, and we can talk more about this, right now we have a free trial. We don't have a free tier. We're a paid product. It's $10 per month, very simple, very transparent. You know, it's like, you know what you're getting, right? Even now that we have a paid product, I think you can engage with different communities in a way that they don't sort of they don't ban you if you if you provide value. I wish, the truth is, I really wish I knew this back in the beginning, because I certainly had I experienced quite a bit of it. There was quite a bit of negative comments towards some of my posts, some of the ways I was engaging with people. I learned quickly. I think the Reddit lesson was very obvious.
Also, there's a Reddit story.
So there was a Reddit. I mean, I certainly found people on Reddit being not always the most best. Kind.
They're not kind. Because it's very anonymous. Humans. They can get very crowd, they have crowd mentality with their pitchforks.
What helped actually is, and I look back to some of these posts, what helped was being very honest and being honest about why you're building a product and telling a story. So when we shared our experience, posting on Reddit and saying, hey, we saw this problem and we noticed there's no good way to have a business phone number on top of your cell phone. And we found that any existing solutions are extremely complicated, expensive, and all of that. And we believe that entrepreneurs deserve an amazing business phone that helps you talk to clients and get more money, grow your business. You know, we just felt it didn't exist. And a lot of people agreed. So I think when you share the story and when you come from the place of like, look, I genuinely want your feedback. And, you know, we shared our journey. We said, like, this is who we are and this is what we're doing. And that actually helps people connect with you as a person, as opposed to like just someone anonymously posting. Plus, I actually wasn't very anonymous on Reddit. Maybe that.
Interesting. It's not your first name, last name. That would be your username. I'm not gonna say it. Let's not go there. I don't want to call you out.
I think it's just comes from the place of if you think of your like. Again, that was how we got our first customers, and in a way, we saw so much demand for what we're building from the early days. And that was really great because that actually helped us, you know, it was even extra sort of fuel to the fire, helped us iterate quicker and build what people were asking for faster. And also the one thing to mention was there's something very powerful when it comes to, so let's say you engage in a community, whether it's any type of forum, Reddit or not Reddit, when people give you feedback and if you take it and sort of incorporate it in what you do and go back to them saying, hey,
we did this. Yeah.
That is what really helps you build trust. And we certainly, you know, we did that. We told people, hey, by the way, remember I was here several months ago? This is where we are now. This is what we're, you know, so we didn't just leave that forum, we kind of kept people in the loop about what was going on. So at that point, you can't really call it being, you know, salesy. It's just, hey, this is our journey. If you're interested, join in. If not, you know, that's fine.
That's perfect. That's great advice. I'm going to use that one day to be less salesy. I read one of your blog posts and then you talked about how you said that sometimes founders have the temptation to try to get feedback from people who are not paying, and you said that this could be a bad idea. So why is that? Why is it maybe a bad idea sometimes to get feedback from people who are there just for the free stuff?
For sure. Well, so first of all, it's very interesting because I just talked about how initially we were a free product. So feedback is great, but when you have a free product, especially with the type of product that we have, you know, you can sign up in seconds. It's very easy to you to get started. You know, we didn't have really any barriers. There was a point that we basically had no barriers for people to just sign up and start using the product, which means you get a lot of volume. You get all kinds of people using your product. In our case, because it's a phone, it can be used in many different ways. It's a business phone. You can use it for all kinds of communications. So what ended up happening is we were getting a lot of feedback, but we didn't really know the difference. Like, is this a person who is with us just because it's free right now? Or is this someone who is actually going to convert, take out their credit card and start paying? And there's a huge difference between those two people, right? Because if you're paying for something, you inherently see value. And we want to build the best business phone. And for us, the we think what we have now is, again, very simple, affordable. And people who are just there looking for free solutions, they can have a lot of feedback for us. And then ultimately, there is nothing we could do for them to convert. So we would be essentially wasting time. The moment we became a paid product, another thing that happened is when you're serious about your business as an entrepreneur, starting your company, you actually want a service that you know is going to stick around and is going to be there long term because you are relying on it for your business. And also things like support, things like being able to, things like continuous improvements to the product. A lot of free products, they're just like out there and like you don't really see any improvements. It's the same thing for years and years. We actually found that we had better conversion when we became a paid product because people were started to take us more seriously.
Yeah.
And then also it helps us prioritize feedback because when we have paid customers, we know, okay, these are the people who trust what we're doing, who see value, who are paying for the product. How can we make their lives easier? Mm-hmm. Suddenly, it just helps you prioritize and focus on delivering value, which before was hard because of all that noise.
Yeah, right. In that blog post, you also talked about one of the YC mentors said that you should be looking for customers who have, quote unquote, hair on fire. It's great. That's really great. Have you figured that out for Open Phone? Who particularly are your customers who have their hairs on fire?
that's an excellent. I love that analogy. It's the type of person who when they hear about what you do, like in my mind, they sign up right away.
Right.
It's almost like no questions asked.
Right.
What we have learned is that, well, first, there are two things. First, we've learned that still our best customers are entrepreneurs and people who are in various stages of their business, but ultimately, you know, they are founders of, you know, early stage companies with growth mindset, people who are starting out, but again, they have ambition to make this business, turn this business into something. We found from what we've learned, those are our best customers. And so that's one aspect of it. And another aspect of it is we see that there's actually a lot of search and a lot of people already looking for a solution. So when we were advised to say like, okay, go after the people who like really need what you're building, we actually found so many people who are actually just looking for a solution like this. This is where content becomes extremely important.
Yeah.
This is where, you know, being engaged in these different forums and different places, making it easy for people to find you. Because again, in our case, there are people searching for exactly what we offer. And those people absolutely have their hair on fire. They, They're looking for it and they're unhappy with whatever setup they already have, which I know is complicated, clunky, expensive, and just not built for a modern business, not built for a 2019 company. So we have those two. That's how we think about it. Being there when people are looking, because again, a lot of them are looking for a solution like this. And also, as founders ourselves, we have, I think, an unfair advantage when it comes to when it comes to building something for other founders, because we ourselves know the pain of, you know, when you use your personal phone number and you have it on all online services, when you put it on your website, you put it as you register for different products, as you incorporate your company, that lack of separation, that lack of privacy, we know what that feels like, so we can relate to other founders who are going through the same.
Is there any particular type of customer that you're finding? I'm thinking, so I sign up for it, the service, and I do free 30 minutes consultation with certain folks. I just had somebody sign up last week and we tried Google Chats, terrible idea. And then I was like, oh, I could have used that phone that I've gotten. And I started thinking about who particularly would be really hyper, like, oh, I need this so badly. I was thinking brick and mortar stores, maybe marketing consultants? Like, have you figured out, like, is there any particular insight into particular entrepreneurs who are hyper users of OpenPhone?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think in a way, there is still a lot of exploration for us there because we just had so much, you know, we almost have been kind of barely keeping up with demand, just trying to...
That's a good problem to have.
we had that problem. So now it's a lot of really learning about exactly, to your point, answering this question really well. What we see now is the founders, you know, we have a lot of interest from founders of B2B companies. So anytime it's, you know, that's one particular segment where B2B founders are expected to offer some, you know, there is expectation to be able to talk to someone on the phone. There's texting too, right? There's this inherent expectation to be able to reach for a customer or someone else to be able to reach you. So that's very interesting. And we're still exploring that. But one use case that I will tell you that was unexpected and definitely the one where, you know, we certainly see tons of demand is we offer people a Canadian and US phone number and you can be based anywhere in the world. So what we found is a lot of international founders building companies, you know, around the world, being able to get a US or Canadian phone number in seconds. There's really no other way to do that.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about a use case where we, you know, starting OpenPhone, we did not think too much about that. But we just found that to be massive. And also, there are a lot of international companies who go through YC. So we also saw that, you know, and they have a lot of customers, investors, partners in the US. So that's one use case where we found, just tons of demand.
That's a great idea because it kind of builds trust when you're based out of Europe or France or UK, and then you have American phone number, then they're like, okay, I know this area code. So it kind of builds that trust there.
For sure. And I think this applies not only to, so this is where this concept of trust, it applies not only to people who need a US phone number from abroad, but also when you are an early stage startup and you want to appear bigger to your customers. When you are, you know, two people in the garage, two people at, you know, at Velocity Garage, right, as you know, when that's you, you want to appear bigger and to be very professional, so that you close those big deals. So you get those customers and, you know, we offer toll-free numbers as well as local numbers anywhere, US and Canada. And in many ways, even having the separate business phone number that when you get a customer calling, you know that it's a business call, so you can answer appropriately. There is, you know, you can customize it with your, again, business voicemail, business hours. Everything is made to make you look and sound great. That can make a huge difference when you are, again, bootstrapping your company and you're trying to get those customers and trying to show them like, hey, we're a small business, but you know, we're here, we have serious intentions.
I want to shift gears a bit and talk about your pricing. I've heard this advice once. I was listening to a podcast, Build My SaaS. The advice they got was charge more, always charge more. I'm looking at $10. I'm like, I would pay more. Like I'm thinking myself for my own, I'm paying $50.
I'll be sending you an invoice after this.
I'm paying $50 a month right now for my phone. I'm sure a bunch of other Canadians, even in the US, $40, $30, $40. Like, how did you come up with your pricing? Are you experimenting with pricing at all?
That's a great question. Well, again, this, I shall be sending an invoice after.
Oh, shoot. Called myself out.
Yeah. No, it's, I certainly agree. I definitely think that when it comes to, I think price on its own is a huge lever, and it actually helps people decide how much to value, like what the value of something, of the product or service. So when it comes to pricing, I wish I could say it was a very sort of scientific crazy, you know, calculated approach. When we were starting out, again, we knew we had to charge something, and we wanted to have not just, let's not talk only about the actual dollar amount. Let's talk about the experience of buying the service, the buying experience. We want it to be the opposite of your experience with any other telecom service, a phone service out there. We wanted you to know exactly how much you're paying and for it to be extremely simple and straightforward. So it was immediately clear we need an unlimited plan. We really don't want you to calculate your minutes and messages. Like, that would be terrible. Like, nobody wants that. So we wanted, first of all, this unlimited plan. And we wanted to, when it comes to pricing, we looked at, essentially competitive alternatives. And we certainly wanted that to be a no-brainer. We wanted it to be affordable for someone who's just starting their company. So the moment you incorporate, let's say you use a service like, you know, Founded or something else where you're just starting a business, we want you to, because we know the importance of having that separation from the get-go. So we wanted it to be affordable and easy from that point, and then sort of grow with you as your company grows. So that was another sort of requirement for what is that pricing. And the truth is that there is just so much more value that we can offer to people. I think my team wouldn't want me to share a lot of things, you know, we're working on. I have to say, there are just a lot of things that, a lot more value that we can provide to people. So so the current price was based on, you know, looking at competitive alternatives, looking at what type of experience we want you to have. And as we grow and as we develop, as we release some of the exciting things in the pipeline, I think you can see us experiment with that more. But we, again, simplicity and transparency is our critical core value. Right. So we wanted you to feel great about sort of the purchase you're making.
Because signing up for a service is a lot of fine print. And yeah, that would be definitely a competitive advantage when it's super simple and it's super transparent. Right?
Exactly. I myself... have had my fair share of, as a consumer, you know, the, just looking at my phone bill, I think a lot of people can relate.
Yeah.
There are times I, you know, in the past where I looked at it and I just, let's just say wanted to say a lot of bad words.
Yeah, I get it.
We wanted to be that, the opposite experience where you know what it is. And as we grow, you can expect us to do a lot more for entrepreneurs. You know, I think in many ways we're still on sort of that first step.
Now, when it comes to signing up for the service, you offer a 7-day trial. How did you come up with that?
And yes,
are you experimenting with 14, 30 day, or was it like, hey, a mentor advised you 7 days and you just stuck with it?
So very interesting. Great question. This is also related to pricing. We had a 30-day free trial. So we had, over the course of, you know, experimenting with our offering, we had a 30-day trial. We had a trial that does not require a credit card. Now we do require a credit card for the trial. So we had 30-day, and then now we're 7 days. And the biggest advantage of having a 7-day trial, so for us, it is actually learning. We can learn much faster. And we did this while we were at YC, because YC is a 3-month long program, and we needed to grow very quickly. And we also needed to just know what types of people, to your point previously, like what types of people really, really need this. And we couldn't have figured that out if we had to wait 31 days for someone to like convert or cancel, right? We needed to know that much sooner. So a 7-day trial is perfect for us in this, in a way that it helps us learn, get that feedback much faster. And also, given our simple pricing, given the fact that our product, the time to value is extremely quick.
Yeah.
You can sign up, you can use your phone in under a minute. So if we were a product where you had to like do a lot more things to get onboarded, I think we would have adjusted. But for our type of product, we have people actually who tell me like, I didn't expect this would happen, but who actually tell me before their trial ends, they're like, I want to pay. So they almost want to pay sooner because they've already tried the product and they like it. And you can do that in a day.
Oh, I'm pretty excited about what's going to happen with Open. Is there anything you can talk about what's like ahead for Open Phone, or is it all hush hush right now?
Well, I can. Yeah, so we, at this point, we're still we're still focusing on building this great business phone for individuals. So when you're an entrepreneur, when you're a professional, whether you're a consultant or you work at a bigger company, the product experience that we're really focusing on making that amazing experience for you as an individual. But the one thing we've heard certainly a lot of times is, you know, we have people who are trying to use us in a bigger team. So what's going to be very important for us is figuring out how to deliver that great experience, not only for one person,
yeah,
but for the team. And I think there is a lot of, that's where it gets very interesting from a growth perspective. So growing within the organization, as well as, you know, branching out sort of externally. We do have people in different companies adopting Open Phone sort of organically.
Yeah.
And we want to see how we can deliver more value to that organization by, having a solution for teams, not only for individuals. And there's a lot of exciting product work there. I'm sure you imagine it's a big step. And, given how many people have been, how many people need this, we just want to grow with our customers. Again,
that makes a lot of sense.
As our customers grow, we want to grow with them.
That's like the plan, right? I want to shift gears and talk about female founders. A few things just to give you context. I talked to Gia Lotti. She was a VP of marketing at Unbounce, and she offers free consulting for female underrepresented founders and marketers. And I actually got called out last year that I had too many dudes on this podcast. So that woke me up and saying, hey, I need to start having more female and underrepresented guests on this podcast on purpose. And I'm curious, what would be your advice to female founders? Because even YC, they have been called out on Twitter. Like, they have a lot of guys, particularly white guys, on the founding team. What would be your advice then to female founders who are interested in getting into YC or getting into startups?
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of things sort of there to unpack. First of all, going through YC, we had a lot of we had a strong community of other women, who we did the program together with. And what I found incredible is that how close that community is. And going through YC, I personally didn't feel, I actually felt the opposite, like tons of support from YC partners, as well as other people who we did the program with. I definitely think that, both YC and everyone, can do more to support support female entrepreneurs. But I think at the same time, it's about sort of knowing that there is help and knowing to ask for it, because as a female founder myself, I think the biggest thing to note is that, you need to build your company and there are people out there willing to help. You just need to ask for it. I think that that applies, also broadly in life. But if you ask for help and if you, if you put yourself out there, I'm sure you will see more support than, it may seem. So YC does a great conference, which is YC Female Founders Conference. Yeah. I actually attended that conference a long time before Open Phone. And that was also in a way, and there are certain people actually I met at the conference who started, who applied for YC and then built their company in YC post conference. So I think that there are many resources out there and there are many, you just have to sort of take advantage of those. And people are extremely willing to help. And the one thing that I think, and I do certainly, and I'm happy to help others, is sometimes you just need to send, you know, a cold email. I find I find that you can get people in startups in the tech community are very open and willing to help, and you know what you need can be sort of an email away.
That's good. That's a good tweetable phrase right there.
Yeah, I have to say that's also something that I probably, one of the things I've learned recently was just that it does take courage, right? I do send quite a bit of cold emails, and I think it gets easier with time, but anything that you need, you know, you just need to put yourself in a position where you, yes, you may be very uncomfortable as is sort of natural. But if you make the ask, you know, like that's, you need to make sure that you do that.
I'd like to wrap up now and ask you where people can find you. What is your call to action for any potential customers out there, and also maybe even to female founders?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I'm always, you know, I'm happy to help how I can. I'm pretty easy to find. I was told I'm way too easy to find, but you know, I'm Dorina at openphone.co. Maybe we can have that written somewhere in the description. Yep. My name is not the easiest to spell.
I'll get that. Yeah.
But the, you know, so happy to help. Also on Twitter, Dorina Kulia. Here we go again.
I'll spell it out. I'll get it. It'll be in the show notes.
Yeah, that's awesome. And for Open Phone, you know, I'm happy to, if you're listening to this podcast, and if you don't have a business phone yet, or you're using something that's, you know, again, made in 1990s, we can help you out. So if happy to do 20% off
That's generous.
To your listeners. So all you need to do is if you send a note to support@openphone.co and mention this podcast, you know, our team will do the rest. So.
Sweet. Well, thank you, Dorina, for your time so much.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for staying all the way until the end of this episode. I had such a great time with Dorina. She is such a wonderful person. I want to share with you my three key takeaways, as always, from this episode. Number one, be helpful and add value. It sounds so simple, but as marketers, sometimes we approach this as, how can I sell and get more users for the least effort? That's how you come across as being a very salesy person. And nobody likes that traditional salesperson who's always pushing people to buy stuff. Now you need to figure out what's in it for them and communicate that first. That's exactly what Dorina did to get through and get her first 100 customers from Facebook groups and Reddit. Second, ask for feedback, but when you do, follow through with it. This builds trust and delight. Imagine giving feedback and they actually implement it. That's amazing. That's actually what happened with me. I found a bug with Transistor.fm, my podcast hosting, and they fixed it within 3 hours, and I was just amazed. I tweeted that so quick, and more people found out about the hosting that I use for podcasts because they did something like that. Finally, when you're early stage, optimize for learning and not for quote-unquote growth. Dorina and her team implemented a 7-day trial because it gave them the opportunity to learn as quickly as possible who's going to be their best customers. You also got better feedback because they're listening to paying customers instead of users who just want free stuff. You're cutting through that noise and getting more valuable stuff. That's it. Those are my three key takeaways. What else did you learn? I would love to hear from you. You can tweet at me. You can send me an email, ramly@growthtoday.fm. As always, I have created a one-page cheat sheet with actionable growth tips from this episode. Download it. It's amazing. I think it's amazing. If something that I would love more podcasts would do, sometimes you don't have enough time and you just want to know what the actionable tips are, you can get it at growthtoday.fm/047. And you can also find a link in the description of wherever you get your podcast. It should be linkable with this. All I need is your email address. I promise I will keep your email very valuable. I won't give it to anybody, and I'll only give you valuable stuff. You will be part of the Growth Marketing Today community with this. As always, you can also find tweetable quotes and show notes and key takeaways from that link.
You know what? Other than that, keep on growing.